Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome in episode 327 of the Sources Say Podcast, your go-to Kentucky basketball and recruiting podcast on the growing KSR Podcast Network. I am your host, Jack Pilgrim of Kentucky Sports Radio. Very happy to be joined once again by the one and only Sean Smith of Go Big Blue Country. Sean, how the heck are you?
I'm hanging in there, Jack. How are you?
It's a weird time. It's a very weird time where we're not, you know, obviously kind of past the point of we should be here going to Phoenix, so much riding, you know, we're like all in on the off season, but considering how many moving parts there are with the roster as currently constructed and stay and go decisions, guys entering the transfer portal, guys going pro, the recruiting dynamics where you have incoming freshmen coming in, three of them participating in the McDonald's game. It's just kind of a weird holding pattern with a lot of stuff where we've only gotten one announcement since the start of the offseason. That is, unfortunately, we kind of alluded to it, Adu Thiro last week, how important it was to keep a guy like Adu Thiro from entering the transfer portal because of how valuable he is to the program. Literally the next day, he puts his name in the transfer portal while still considering a return to Kentucky, while putting his name in the draft to test the waters. Some, you know, kind of, I think, internal hope on his end that he works out well because he is kind of a freak of nature athlete. And I think the hope on his end is that with so many guys kind of coming back due to NIL and the changing landscape of the portal and money involved with all of that, that somebody's got to get drafted, and maybe they see Adu Thiro as a guy that, you know, somebody would take a flyer on maybe early second. I think the dream is to slide in late first. Obviously that kind of seems a little far-fetched, but that's the dream, that he's keeping all of his options open. But you would think that we would have more movement by now, Sean, and you would love for that not to be the first domino to fall because of how valuable he is to the future of this program, Sean.
Yeah, you would. And I guess I'm a little surprised that we're a week removed from meetings, and that's the only thing that we have really gotten from what's already within the program, Jack. So I would anticipate that stuff's probably going to start picking up here relatively soon and start moving and kind of have an idea of what this thing could look like. But that was a domino that late in the week that probably caught some people off guard, even though we kind of tried to talk about it a little bit without getting too far into it, because ultimately, Jack, we don't necessarily know every single thing that's about to happen within this program. We can anticipate, we can expect, but we don't know when these things happen. But you mentioned and stuff, and we talked that is something that was on the table, and it clearly is. Still a return to Kentucky is possible. NBA, somewhere else in college basketball, there's a lot. And this is what makes this whole process the most exhausting time of the year. Absolutely. And it's from whenever you lose in the tournament all the way into June now, where you just kind of sit and you hold your breath. And that's what's making college basketball so much harder for coaches. And why you're seeing why I still think that there needs to be two to three more spots added to every single college basketball staff to navigate the waters that we're in right now. Like, these people that are in the Final Four this weekend are already recruiting and taking guys from the portal for next season while still trying to win a national championship. And then when this all ends, they instantly got to start recruiting their own guys back and navigating their thing. So, like, nobody's job stops. Whether you win or you lose, you're still caught in this storm and whirlwind of what's going on. And Kentucky basketball's once again right here in the thick of it.
And I think that's where a lot of the apathy comes from the fan base, where it's just like, bro, we just went through an entire season of learning new guys and just, you know, hitting reset on the roster, getting used to all these new freshmen. And now the season ends before anybody wanted it to, and now we have to pretend to care about six new guys coming in on top of whoever they add in the transfer portal, on top of stay and go decisions. And there was one that kind of, I think, caught some Kentucky fans in a sense of frustration, was Mackenzie Mbako going back to Indiana early in the process, not testing the waters. A guy that wasn't on any draft boards and realized that he wasn't on any draft boards and just decided to come back. This program doesn't really get that luxury. And I think that leads to a lot of frustration where they're like, damn, if we're going to lose the way that we did, and it's not acceptable, still isn't acceptable, still inexcusable, just as it was 2 weeks ago, still feeling the exact same way today. But if there was any consolation prize, it would be, well, let's get Reed to announce a quick return. Let's get a do back. Let's get DJ. Let's get all of these guys to just say, screw it. We're not going to even mess with the NBA stuff. Let's just push all of our chips in on this season. That's not happening. And I think that's where the restlessness, and when the McDonald's game happens on Tuesday night, the excitement really is not.
It's not.
I mean, it's weird. It was very weird watching it, where it's like, I think a lot of fans watched it because we had a thread going on Chaos Board, kind of talking about the ins and outs of it, how things were unfolding, and it did numbers. Like, there was a lot of excitement about it, but a lot of it, like, there was an overwhelming response of, we don't care what's going on. It's like people were hate watching it, going, I can't believe John Calipari is making us sit here and watch this McDonald's game again, knowing damn well that these guys are going to let us down. Like, it's a really weird feeling to be involved in the heat of the offseason right now, with all of the different dynamics, and just considering what we went through just a week ago with whether or not John Calipari would even be back as the head coach.
It's one of those things where you went through that meeting and you're hearing that some stuff's going to change, but when you sit back and you look at the last 7 days, what's really changed, you know? And it's not just going to change overnight, whatever this ends up being, but you want things and you want them now. And you want to see it, but instead you lose what you considered probably to be one of the core key pieces to a run next year to the portal currently and to the draft and you know, possibly not in your program a year from now. And then you're watching a game that is made up of freshmen where you have been brutally reminded multiple times now that you just can't do it with freshmen on your roster playing, making up probably 60, 70, 80% of your rotation. So I think a lot of people watched it last night and got at least some comfort in knowing that Kentucky's got guys coming in that are going to be able to contribute, that can excite you. You get, you know, Jaden Quaytons in the 2-year role makes him so appealing, honestly. And I think that kind of softens the blow of maybe being young at some spots. Boogie is an exciting scorer that can make shots. Like, there's some excitement there, Jack, but the overall sense of optimism isn't really high because you know that you need to add veterans to this thing. You need to add returning pieces. Still watched it, though. And I'm willing to bet that probably 95% of the people in this fan base did the exact same thing that they've done the last 15 years. They've watched Kentucky's McDonald's All-Americans in that game perform, play well, do some things. Because everybody in the end of this, Jack, is hopeful, and they're going to support whoever's wearing these jerseys. And that was a way of supporting last night, was supporting those guys. Now, you're through it. We actually have some stuff to talk about with those guys that participated. But there has to be some tough decisions made over the next 4 to 5 weeks. And some of it is even in that class, in my opinion, with where you really go with this. And are you concrete in bringing six guys in? Because that's the tough decisions you got to make. Are there going to be staff changes? Like, there's a lot of things that right now we're navigating, but we've heard change, but so far nothing's changed. Will anything change? I have no idea. Hopefully the end result changes, and that's the ultimate goal.
It's weird, man. It's very, very weird. And I do – look, if there is one thing that needed to happen – it was what Boogie Flan said at Media Day. My goodness, buddy, you nailed it. What a PR, just in terms of PR gold, I don't think you could ask for anything better than what Boogie Flan said to, like, I think Kentucky fans are just tired of being told that their feelings aren't valid. That the stuff that they feel of Am I crazy? Is this program not where it needs to be right now, but being told constantly that we've been good, you guys have just been overreacting, like the gaslighting that we talked about. Like, it feels like every single time something big happens within this program that we feel is like, whoa, buddy, this isn't acceptable. There's an immediate push of, you're being dramatic. You need to calm down. And you're like, but I can't control how I'm feeling about this. Why am I the one that needs to calm down? It becomes this like, wait, am I really the problem here? Or it's that weird dynamic that happens. And then Boogie Flan gets asked, hey, there's a lot of pressure on this Kentucky program right now, considering the lack of postseason success. What are your thoughts on that? Or is that something that you have to keep in mind? Are you nervous about the pressure, all that stuff? And he says, Kentucky fans reacted the way they're supposed to react. They want to win. That's what we signed up for. I don't feel any pressure with that. It's like, thank you. Thank you. That's all we wanted to hear is we are supposed to win these games. We have not been winning these games. It's okay for fans to feel some type of way about it. He said it perfectly. And it adds a level of like, hey, I love watching Boogie Flan play a little bit more because he gets what he's signing up for. No matter what unfolds throughout the season, it's not just this blind NBA echo chamber where they just come in, check all the boxes, and immediately do whatever it takes to leave. They understand what they're signing up for. And I think that's what Kentucky fans just want to hear. And Jaden Quaintance kind of said similar things. Carter Knox said, you know, we know that things haven't been where they need to be with losing in the first round. He kind of slipped up and said, we're going to get past the first round. And it's like, buddy, that's not the goalpost here. Like, that's not where you're not making the field goal. If you just get past the first round, there's a lot more at stake here. But then he kind of changed his tune and said, you know, our goal is to win a national championship. We know what is at stake here and all that. So the messaging is at least where it needs to be from these guys. And it added a level of like freshness to the event of, okay, at least these guys know what they're signing up for. And they were pretty darn good in a really, really competitive game back and forth that ended up coming down to the final shot, final buzzer. You got some, you know, some real high level play across the board and three of your guys standing out in their own individual way. It wasn't that one guy just went nuclear scoring or one guy was just this defensive menace. They all kind of did their own individual things where you could kind of see the vision of what their role is going to be next year. And it kind of, it added a level of, okay, maybe we should take a couple steps back from the ledge, I think.
Yeah. And it was a night to me that was about turning the page, where you now can officially turn the page and start looking at something else. You're not necessarily living in what happened 2 weeks ago against Oakland. You flip the page. Like, Cal's coming back. He's still the head coach here. You went through the same process of watching McDonald's All-Americans. Now, the one thing that I will say about this, Jack, is it was good to see those guys making plays. I just don't want to see all three of them start this season at Kentucky. And I want it to be because Kentucky's got either something coming back or they've mixed in some veteran pieces from the portal that are instant impact guys that you know what you're getting. Because we have seen guys go play in that game and then it not translate to instant success at Kentucky. It's created ups and downs, and that's going to happen. If you're bringing six guys in, some of them are going to thrive, some of them are not. And you're running a risk, if they don't, of having a season to where you just get bounced, put yourself in a situation with so much youth to be on a bubble, trying to play your way into the tournament, because we're seeing right now, if Cal's message is college basketball so old and it's hard to win and be physical, then you've got to go get it. Jaden Quaintance to me is so young, but the 2-year window for him, I look at this like maybe this is a situation where Cal doesn't feel forced right out of the gate to have to force him into a role or into a situation, because look, he's younger than any of the other guys that we've been talking about. Youthful going up, but he's going to get pushed around at times, but I think he has a mindset to attack it and be physical and eventually play physical. Like you're seeing, I think, and he has a skill set too that I think is maybe offensively you're going to get a little, it's going to be a little raw at times early, but Jack, I see so much potential with his game that the value and stuff of him being in this, like that's the exciting piece to this class to me is Jaden, because of the 2-year window that we're working with here. I know you've dropped some stuff about, you know, Z and things that we'll get into, but I still think that Kentucky, regardless of what this looks like, needs a veteran physical piece from the portal. And when I look at what this roster can look like at guard and on the interior, it seems to me like adding on the interior is probably going to be where they go veteran heavy. Because I just don't know. Because to me, the guys coming back, possibly, I look at guard play more so than I look at post play right now, because I think there's going to be more of an exodus on the interior than there is in the backcourt. Even though Rob Dillingham and then Reed Shepherd, we know that decision and stuff is possible there. But I don't know how many pieces are going to be on the perimeter, but I can see a few there on the interior if some stuff plays out. And that's where I think Kentucky needs to change the physicality. But Jaden's a good starting point for it. And I saw a lot out of him last night that I liked. But there's going to be some maturation. There's going to be some ups and downs. You cannot go into another season, Jack, where what happened last year was none of the three bigs were ready. None of them. None of them had experience because Ugo barely played the year before. And you got left just standing there with not a capable front court. So that's where you go veteran to me and go get somebody that you have seen do it in college basketball kind of as a security blanket. And then if Jaden Quinton's just becomes the talented freak that we expect him to be, and he's better than that guy, then it's all worked out. You just can't put all your eggs in that one basket and go youth at some of these spots again. That's what I'm hoping doesn't happen.
I thought we saw more physicality, defensive prowess, and rebounding effort on the glass than anything we saw at times this past season from Jaden Quinton last night. Just, I mean, even the simple fundamentals of two-handed rebounds, just the timing, the understanding where he is on the floor as a 16-year-old. He turned 17 in July. He will not turn 18 until the following summer. Like, this kid is just a piece of clay that is 6'10", 230 pounds with a huge vertical, quick, moot, nimble, like moves really, really well, runs the floor extremely well. The lateral quickness, going out on the perimeter and guarding guards, and then under, you know, having the body to kind of bang down low a little bit, it was kind of like, whoa, again, he's so unbelievably raw. He had no idea where he was on the floor half the time. And in terms of just like, he was just setting screens just to set screens. It's like, bro, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to try to get some stuff moving. Don't give me the, like, he would get the ball and be like, don't know what to do with this. Get it out. Or I'm just going to go dunk on somebody's head. Like, he doesn't have that understanding because that's the rawness. But there's so many raw, natural gifts that he has where it's just like, dude, the second he puts it all together, he is like, that's what we've talked about on the show. He is a max level contract player with a 2-year runway. This isn't like, I go back to Justin Edwards this past year, the stories of him feeling the weight of the world on his shoulders about making it as a lottery pick, as a top 5 draft pick, whatever, to support his family. Like, that was kind of an ongoing thing of he felt like he had to get out in a year to put food on the table for his mom and his family. And they had to have a sit down meeting where it was like, buddy, we're going to be fine. Don't put that weight on your shoulders. And it was an emotional moment for him. And that isn't going to be the case with Jaden Quinton. You know that once this season begins, it's a 2-year runway where he doesn't have to become a lottery pick in year one. Whatever pace he needs to go at to get to that potential, he can go. And that's why it's so crucial to go get Cliff Amori at Rutgers. Go find your safety net, your physical veteran presence that you know you're not going to ever have to worry about the physicality. You're not going to have to worry about the defense. You're going to get the shot blocking. You're going to get the rim protection. Go get that guy to hopefully, if you can go get big Z back, one of the big, the 7-footers, there was a lot of overlapping with their talents and skill sets and all that. There's a lot of portal rumblings, especially with Aaron Bradshaw and Ugo. I don't think that's going to be a heartbreaking loss if that's how it all unfolds. But if you can manage to get big Z back, convince him that, hey, right now your draft stock is maybe second round, firm second round, where you're going to be living in the G League. You're going to be riding buses from Fort Wayne to Greensboro. To like, is that a life that you really want to be living when you can be making NIL money, where you could have a full year in the strength and conditioning program, a full off season, a full summer, a preseason, exhibition games, getting real chance for an actual fresh start and a full runway that he did not get this past season. How does that change things for him? And if the money is right, where, you know, I think he wants to, if it were up to him right now, he would go pro. But I think he just understands the long term makes so much more sense to come back and try to become the lottery pick that he clearly has the potential to become. And pairing him next to Jaden Quaintance, the finesse and the pure raw skill between the two of them is just unprecedented. Those two together would be a home run. But if you're going to do that, you have to have the complementary brute force. That's what this roster was missing this past cycle. That would be priority number one. Go get a fifth-year senior who weighs 240, 250 pounds, 260 pounds, seven-footer, going to shot block shots. Go get that guy. And I like that trio a lot next year in the front court, Sean.
I do too. And that's actually the blueprint that I'm looking at, that if it gets to that point and that's what it looks like, then I feel a lot better about this roster moving into next season. If that's the trio that you're rolling with, then I think that you have a completely different outlook on what to expect. And I love talking about the amount of runway you have with Jaden. And I think that that's just a different approach. And I think that kind of alleviates some pressure off of him stepping into this campus, because you're not on this fast track of 7 to 8 months and having to be ready for a lottery pick. Now you're talking, okay, I know I'm here 2 years. If there's somebody here that's pushing me every day in practice, I'm not putting the pressure or the weight of the world on my shoulders to outperform them every single opportunity. I'm not worried if I have a game where I'm playing 26, 27 minutes and the next game I'm playing 16 to 17. I can develop at my own pace while continuing to get better and continue to get opportunities, because we know one thing. Jaden Quaintance is going to play, Jack, regardless of who's on this roster. Boogie Fland is going to play, regardless of who's on this roster. This is where it gets a little tricky for me with the rest of this class. Overall, I don't think this is a great class. Not a class that's just going to come in and be the one and done group. You're like this year, this class with Rob and Reed in the backcourt and some of these other classes that have come through Kentucky, I think you kind of knew what to expect with some guys. This one, I'm hopeful that two of them are ready to be high impact players. And if that's all you get out of it, I'm okay with that. As long as you go make additions from the portal that take over some of that high impact. You also return a piece or two. I don't know how many that's going to be. I'm going to cap it maybe at three. If you can get 2 to 3 returning pieces, go get 2 to 3 portal additions. Because when you take 6, you've kind of already handcuffed yourself to not a whole lot of room to operate in the portal. Because we know Cal's going to want to play as freshman guys. That's where, to me, it starts to get a little clunky with Carter Knox, Billy Richmond, if Adu Thierro comes back, if Jordan Burks is on this roster, Joey Hart's on this roster, just throwing some names out. That's like some guys there where I just don't know where they fit in the shuffle of what Kentucky's going to do. Adu would play, yes. But me personally, I'm not willing to put a huge price ticket on Adu Thierro. That's just me. I'm not. Because I think you can go find that in the portal. I would love to have Adu back because he's got two years of Kentucky experience, and that's the driving force behind it. Because it's getting old naturally within your program. That's what I want. I'm just not willing to pay a huge price for it. When I do think skill set wise, you can upgrade. But the one thing that you can't simulate is playing in this program for 2 years and a guy that's gone through it. That's the value of him back. So that's where I'm talking about tough decisions have to be made, because you can't feel like, Jack, that you can't go recruit over somebody right now. If you got 6 freshmen in the fold, and now that you looked at this and you've lost another opening weekend and into a double-digit seed, if there's somebody in the portal that pushes somebody out, you just have to do it. If you feel like that portal piece adds instant value to your roster and makes you more competitive immediately, that's where these freshmen and these guys, maybe some of them have to look and say, okay, do I want to be here? Is this the path for me? I'm just trying to throw it all out there right now because I came out yesterday and said that this roster needs to be rotation, not roster. 60% of it needs to consist of returning or portal pieces. So if we're playing 8 to 9 guys, 60 to 65% of that, in my opinion, has to be made up of those pieces. And then you mix in 3 freshmen, or to me. I think you're getting Billy Richmond, Carter Knox are going to play. But I still think you're playing a dangerous game if you're playing 4 freshmen 20-plus minutes out of this class. I think you're still too young.
It's a numbers game, and it's so
– it's tough.
Like, I don't – it's – that's a really tough dynamic when you kind of handcuffed yourself with 6. Like, Samto Cyril, what is his role going to be next year? I know, like, we're talking about experience, you know – physicality, rebounding, those things. And on paper, that's who he is, but he is a young freshman that, you know, yeah, he is a post-grad freshman who could have reclassed up and, you know, he's old for being a freshman, but man, why not have a fifth-year senior have that role? Like Trey Townsend of Oakland just hit the portal. Yeah. Is that not kind of what you're looking for in terms of, okay, well, you're not just adding just a pure rebounder. You got a guy who has some skill to him, kind of like an up, you know, big time, you know, a different version of Trey Mitchell, if you will, like a Trey Townsend, kind of that inside out, comfortable, but strong physical. But the experience part, that's the thing that this roster is missing. You know, talking to some people around the program, that was missing with, you know, Antonio Reeves was a great guy to have that you could lean on from a veteran standpoint. But in terms of a vocal leader, that's not who Antonio Reeves ever was. Trey Mitchell was that guy, but he kind of hit a wall when he went through his injuries where he's struggling with confidence. He's trying to figure out himself out. He can't be babysitting the 18-year-olds either. So it kind of became this point late in the year where they didn't have that guy on the roster. They didn't have the vocal leader. And, you know, it was kind of DJ Wagner, but DJ Wagner was also the guy who had his own health issues and, you know, the lingering ankle and all that. Was he really a guy that could lay down the law in the locker room? Not really. That guy just didn't really exist. And it ended up kind of screwing the team over late. I like Samto, but you need age. You need experience. You cannot run it back with 6 incoming freshmen. And they physically have it. Carter Knox is, you know, I was really impressed with what I saw from Carter Knox. 6'6", 6'7", 225 pounds, knows how to use his body well, but really skilled and you know, kind of that Chris Livingston slasher, you know, physical inside out guy. I like him a lot. But that doesn't make up for 5 years of experience that you would get in the out of the portal. You got to add it from somewhere. You can't just run it back with 6 incoming freshmen and 3 sophomores and just call it a rotation.
No, and this is where – so since the last time we recorded, I can't tell you how many times I've just sat to myself and thought about what does college basketball need to look like now? What does roster construction look like? And for younger coaches, I think it's been easier to navigate because you've not been ingrained in who you are for 30 years. And this is the challenge for Cal right now. And he's the head coach at Kentucky, and we're hopeful that he figures this thing out. Now, the one thing that happened here, Jack, stay with me a little bit here because I've had this conversation on the phone with somebody twice this week. And I was like trying to get my thoughts together the last 2 days about how I was going to condense it. Go back to 2022. Sabir Wheeler, Oscar Tshiebwe, Kellen Grady, Davion Mintz. When I sit back and I really look at it, they weren't far off. They really weren't. Shaedon Sharpe was an elite player in that class that did not play. I know nobody wants to have that conversation. He didn't play. But that roster overall was the best one on paper to make a run in this last 4-year window that Kentucky's had. If you look at KenPom and the analytics, and when you look at KenPom and the analytics right now at the Final Four, look where they're at. Look where those teams are. Now, NC State, I know, and stuff, and Alabama, but the overall KenPom number, like to me, UConn or Purdue is winning the national title. And when you look at it, they reflect a team on paper that all year was talked about winning a national title. That team at Kentucky that year on paper was a Final Four national championship team. I just thought they were a position or two off because of bad fits. Sabir Wheeler was a bad fit for what Kentucky was trying to do. If you have the plotting big in Oscar, if you could have taken Reed Shepard or Kayson Wallace or Rob Dillingham or someone else and slid them into that point guard role, Kentucky has a different look and a different dynamic and a different feel to it offensively. Better spacing, everything. And I think you could have been built to survive. The next year, really, really old, but super clunky. Jacob Toppin, Chris Livingston side by side. Like they've had, to me, they've been close, but they've always been missing the one thing. This is where I think that it comes back that you go after the elite freshman. And that's why I keep saying Boogie and Jaden are the two that I have the most confidence in and kind of emerging and being those high impact freshmen out of this group with veteran pieces and returning pieces coming back. And I think that the spacing now with skill set of the guys you have is probably the most important part of how you construct this. But Cal went old and he lost to St. Peter's. He stayed old because they were missing in recruiting still there for a couple of years, and he lost to Kansas State. I'm not going to crush him for going back to what he was most comfortable with, which was being super young, and he was close. I think if they'd had anything in the front court this year with some physicality, I think it could have been a completely different Kentucky basketball team. Oscar Tshiebwe, no, we don't want to talk about it. If Oscar Tshiebwe had been on this team, I get it that Oscar struggled to defend pick and roll, and I get that Oscar struggled to defend overall, but Oscar would have cleaned up a lot with his rebounding rate, his offensive rebounding, and a physicality standpoint that Kentucky's defensive Kempar number would have naturally climbed just by his presence being there, and they would have had the physicality of a veteran. I know it's hard to go back and talk about something because I think all of us got so caught up in spacing and offense that we kind of lost probably what would have actually been the deciding and changing factor for a team that played 30-plus games and was missing physicality. It would have been him. So that's why I don't think they've been far off in any of these 3 years, really. Now, here's the challenge. You go super young for a year. When you're committing to that, that also means you're committing to it for the following year because you're recruiting that way. They just took Carter Knox a few weeks ago. Another young piece right before they lose in the NCAA tournament to Oakland. Here's the challenge. You got to get old, and you got to get old right now. How do you navigate that with already taking six? You do the best you can with it now, but your philosophy moving forward has to change. I just don't think this is a program that can take 6 to 7 freshmen anymore at any point, that you leave those scholarships open. You go get the Boogies, the Jaden Quaintances, maybe a Carter Knox or a Billy Richmond. I don't know about both moving forward, or Sompto. Like your class just looks different, in my opinion, Jack, from this point moving forward, because the rest of it is portal. And a lot of people want to talk about what Arkansas's did, you know, they're done going heavy portal and it not working out. I'm not saying take 7 to 8 transfers every single year. I'm saying if you're going to get guys in high school, then there has to be a clear-cut path for them developing within your program. Because, like, if Jordan Burks were to go to the portal right now, what was it for? You used a scholarship for 1 year and you didn't develop and mature within your program. I don't know if that's going to happen. Adu, 2 years. That's the value of a dude coming back. You naturally get older. All this stuff that I'm saying, it's tough to navigate, but I just don't think that his overall recruiting philosophy can really change the way they construct their roster until a year from now. And we see what that roster looks like, but he has to do the best he can with this now. And to me, it is go recruit over guys if you have to, because you got to change it now. The pressure's on you. Hopefully that made sense. I've talked to this conversation literally 5 times probably in the last couple of days.
And think about Keyshawn Johnson at Arizona.
Exactly. Yep.
That guy was supposed to be at Kentucky.
Yes.
Think about how much that would have just changed the dynamic of what this team was going to be and what, you know, the identity that this team desperately needed. The long, athletic, versatile, strong, defensive oriented guy. That was the one killer that this roster was missing. I feel like it. Okay. I think that that loud vocal experience presence is the one thing that this group is missing that will make me feel infinitely better. I don't want to, like, I know that defense was historically bad this past year, but you can't overcompensate. I feel like we're kind of doing this swing of overcompensating for whatever was, you know, we were too young. Now we got to go historically old. Well, now we're need to go back to historically young. Okay. And all in on offense with historically bad defense. Now we need to go all in on defense. We're going to leave behind the offense. Like, we got to find a middle ground with all of these things. And I want to ask you, how much would a DJ Wagner return mean for the experience, for the leadership in the defense? And what would you need along? So say that your core is DJ, Big Z, Jaden Quaintance, Boogie Fland. Go get Cliff Amore. Go get one of those types of physical veteran presences in the front court and take it from there. What needs to happen from there? If you have the mix of returning talent, your incoming transfer for experience in the front court, I think you're missing another vocal guy in the backcourt. I think you're missing that one. You need shooting. You got to have shooting from somewhere. Where does that come from? And is there a way to go get that in the portal with a vocal leader? Or do you go get a whatever the Jamal Sheed equivalent is for Houston, that guy, that anchor of the backcourt? Is there that equivalent out there somewhere?
Those guys exist. And things like it, when you look at, I mean, so many names going to the portal, and there's going to be plenty more names go in over the course of the next couple of weeks. But all the things that you just said, though, that's why I'm fearful that if this comes down to it and he has to play freshman, I'm concerned, because I just don't think that you can run into this season with four freshmen eating up 50 to 60% of your rotation. This is not the class to do it. I really, truly believe that. Now, there are pieces in this class. Like, I think Carter Knox has potential to be a solid basketball player at Kentucky. I just don't want to have to rely on Carter Knox playing 20-plus minutes a night or having to start, because I want that role to be a natural progression for him. Same thing with Billy Richmond. Like, I would love for those guys to stay committed, stay signed, be in this, and we look up in 2-plus years from now, they're still in this program and they're thriving and putting themselves in position to – being a Duke Thiero or somebody that can maybe make their way into the league or something like that. Like, I love Carter's body. I really do. I like his frame. You and I saw him at Peachtree.
He moves well.
He does move really well. Like, there's potential there. It's just the majority of this roster, Jack, and this is where it gets tough. A lot of these guys that they target, are some of them for reserve roles or some of them for starting roles? And I think that's the thing that we got to navigate. And right now it's hard to guess because we don't know who's leaving and who's not. If DJ's back, I take it, because you're getting a point guard experience that's Kentucky experience. Is there some areas, are there some areas to DJ's game that need to significantly improve? Yes. Can't
still
be left
18,
hand,
by the way. Doesn't turn 19.
Yes.
May.
Can't be left hand dominant. Can't be left hand dominant. Can't be left hand dominant. That's probably where I start. Like, can't go right to get back left. And when I watched some tape from early on and in his high school run and stuff, like, there was finishes going right and there was plays being made there, but he got comfortable doing this and wanting to get back to there and improve jump shot. But I still think that a guy that's done it and wore it for a year has value, especially at that position, if you can surround the rest of the roster with pieces that help him thrive. And that's what I was getting at with Savir earlier. I wasn't trying to just bash Savir. Like, I don't think that everything that happened that year was Savir Wheeler's fault. Or even the next year. But I just thought that if you keep mixing ingredients, at some point you're going to get a bad product. It's not going to taste the way it was supposed to. If I'm making something and I'm just throwing stuff together, maybe you get lucky. If you don't, probably going to taste horrible. And I thought at the end, it didn't work in Kentucky's favor. This is baking a cake right now. And we're just hoping to God that we don't put the ingredient in it that just ruins it and blows it up.
We should have Steven put a Photoshop a big chef hat on top of John Calipari just in the cooking in the kitchen.
That is basically what we're doing. We're cooking in the kitchen right now, and we're looking. And this is where you just, at one point, when college basketball was young, Jack, and it was young across the board, what Cal did was the right thing to do. Take the best freshman and figure it out. And they figured it out more oftentimes than they didn't. Right now, it is so veteran-led that when you look at the Final Four, there are transfers all over these rosters. Now, Purdue started four guys that started in their program. Tennessee, we know they were super old, right there on the verge of a Final Four. Duke was all Duke players in that starting lineup. When you look at UConn, three transfers, and you go down the list here, like some of the best players, Dalton Connect, did not start at the high major level. Like, transfers have taken over the game of basketball. That's going to continue for at least the near future here, at least this year.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Next. And that's the kind of the balance that Cal's got to figure it out. And that's where these decisions, and we know this, the coaching staff knows where these guys are going right now. Like, those conversations have been had, and I'm sure they got a feel, and they're recruiting, and they're taking and getting an idea of what they want. But if you can tell me right now that I can get DJ Wagner, I can get Z, and that kind of be like a core there that I have coming back, I'm okay with that. Because that is, if I said two to three, there's my two, and maybe I get a surprise third somewhere. And now I go get two to three guys from the portal. And those two to three guys that you identify from the portal, Jack, have to be instant impact guys, probably for one season. It can't be a Jacob Toppin project where you get 2 to 3 years of development. It can't be an Adu-Thiero freshman to sophomore jump. You got to go get guys that have proven it in their roles at another school that can instantly add value and help you win now, to kind of bridge the gap for how you do want to change your philosophy and how you construct rosters. Because I do think it's going to be hard on Cal to get his full 100% philosophy change and how they want to do it now. A year from now, that's not the case, because they can recruit a different way. But right now, he's in a pinch because he's taken so many freshmen that he's kind of handcuffed himself to over 50% of his roster already being made up of freshmen. That's hard to flip. And stuff.
You see Cal's chef hat.
Yeah, I didn't even see that pop up. That's perfect. Steven, you're the man. Like, he's baking it. Like, I mean, this is the thing is, are we all going to want to sit at the table and try it, or are we all going to get sick? And I just, does it make sense what I'm trying to get at, though? Because the longer I've gone on, I'm not trying to give Cal a pass for what's happened. It is unacceptable, and it has to be better. But right now, seeing instant change is hard, Jack, because you've already committed to six freshmen walking through your door.
How much is the value of returning as a Kentucky returner versus the experience that comes in via the portal? How much of the gap is there between a grad senior, or let's just call it a straight up, you know, fourth year senior, versus a sophomore at Kentucky? What is the gap there in those 2 years, going to get a Kellen Grady, going to get a guy that you know is going to be here for 1 year, a Trey Mitchell? Trey Mitchell's a good example. What is the difference between Trey Mitchell coming in versus getting a returning DJ in terms of experience and leadership? I know it's obviously personality based, and you know, DJ.
Well,
the DJ returning is different than Antonio Reeves returning or whatever, but how much stock are we putting into the growth that you're going to get from a Z leadership wise? I know it's different because it'd be like a 12-year-old growing to a 14-year-old, but DJ is the good example because he was seen as the alpha, the leader, all that. Do you need a complimentary all-in veteran guy, 4-year, 5th-year guy next to him to make up for some of that, or can you trust him to kind of anchor things in the backcourt? That's the interesting dynamic.
It is, and I still think that DJ's best basketball is still ahead of him.
Absolutely.
And I'm hopeful that DJ Wagner comes back. Like, I really am, because I think that there are avenues to improve and be a much better prospect, much better player a year from now than what he is right now. But if you get DJ back and you get Boogie, and that's your starting backcourt at the 1-2, I'm still going to lean on that. If you can add three transfers, you add one at all three levels here. You add one that can step in and eat up minutes at point guard for you. That's just assuming that Reed Shepard's not on this roster. If Reed Shepard's on this roster, then I throw out needing anybody else in the backcourt other than DJ and Reed and Boogie. I can live with that and roll. Now, if Reed is not a part of this, and I'm just going to say he's not, just because for what we're talking about now, let's say he's not. I think that you go portal addition to the backcourt that can play point. You have to add a portal five.
Got you.
Somebody with some physicality on the interior. And then I go get a 3-and-D portal guy that can kind of eat up maybe 2, 3, 4, one of those positions. Maybe go get a 6-7 frame. The kid from Wisconsin.
Store.
Like, a guy like that can do some things for you, or just a veteran long lanky wing that can shoot the three and can guard, a body that can be versatile across positions. Now, if Justin Edwards surprises everybody and comes back, if he were a surprise piece, just saying, I would take it. But I think that you need to add some experience to point guard, 2, 3, 4 in a combination. If you can get a guy that can slide and play multiple positions, at least 3, 4, and then something on the interior. And then that means you're talking 2 to 3 returning pieces, 2 to 3 transfers. And then who I think in Boogie and Jaden Quaintance are going to be really good freshmen. And then you hope that Carter Knox or Billy Richmond can kind of pop and give you something. I love Travis Perry. I just don't know what I'm expecting out of year one from Travis. I don't. He can make shots, but I need to see a little bit more and stuff from him too. But I'm most confident in Boogie Fland and Jaden Quaintance being the most impactful freshmen on this roster a year from now. Carter's got the body that if he has a really good summer, still not sure on what where Billy Richmond and these guys fall. I
wish we could combine those two. Billy Richmond and Carter Knox together is the dream. The guy that we're talking, the AJ Store, that is the vision that we have of defense, you know, kind of really, really aggressive, long, athletic, all-in defense, DeAndre Liggins type is Billy Richmond. And then Carter Knox, great build, offensive-oriented, confident shooter, kind of the fadeaway, operates well at all three levels out of the high post. Really kind of good, versatile, inside-out presence. If you could smack those two together, we go, hell yeah, that's the one guy that's missing. But you can't play them. I don't love the idea of playing them together, but you wish that they were the same human being, their all of their best traits together. It's just a weird fit. You almost wish that you got one or the other and then overcompensated with all in on defense, you know, an experienced defender rather than Billy, or an experienced scoring threat to replace Carter. Like, I just wish they both weren't freshmen.
I agree with that 100%. And that's where I say the clunkiness on this roster could get clunky. Is let's say Adu comes back. Let's say Jordan Burks comes back. You've got Billy Richmond. You've got Carter Knox. And then where do you add veteran pieces then? Because you've already got freshmen.
Bodies. I mean,
it's just, there's people there.
Because that's four. I mean, that's 10 guys, assuming that you get DJ and Z back. I mean, that's 10 scholarship bodies that there's not much operating room elsewhere.
No, and here's the other thing. Cal can say that he doesn't make promises in recruiting, but there are conversations had behind closed doors, in houses, over the phone, where your role is discussed.
Yeah. What is your vision for my son? is a, like, it's not promising minutes, but is my son going to be having his ass on the bench for 40 minutes? You know, Aaron Bradshaw is the perfect example because talking to some people that know what was promised role discussed with him, they kind of thought that everything that Z ended up becoming was what was promised to Bradshaw. And like, I don't think it's a secret that Z is the better player than Bradshaw. And obviously they're different and provide different things, but long term you're buying into Z stock infinitely more than AB's as of right now. So I think there was that kind of sense of, well, why did you push for me to come back through all the USC rumors and the clutch and all that stuff? Why did you push for me to come back when you would just turn right around? Once I committed to you, you turned right around and brought Z in. They end up becoming best friends and, you know, they are good locker room pieces, but you got to start worrying about complementary roles and overlaps there.
Yeah, you do. And that's where, when you looked at what they did last summer, when Aaron was going through the, you know, obviously the clutch stuff, and we talked our way through it. It's hard to believe it's been like 10 or 11 months ago now at this point.
Actually, he broke his foot at the McDonald's game. Interestingly enough.
So you had a broken foot at the McDonald's game. You had Ugo get hurt right before they start competition in Toronto. You go get Z like a week and a half, 2 weeks after you get back from Toronto. But the thing was, Jack, is all three of those names that I just named you were inexperienced guys. Mm-hmm. Ugo didn't have a ton of experience coming back and was coming off an injury. Aaron Bradshaw never really settled in, struggled to kind of find his way and a skill set and where he fit alongside it. The one mistake that I do think that Cal made this year that I wish that he could go back and do all over was I thought, and it was, and maybe we would have got it had we had an eligibility decision on Z in December. Or even November, I feel like he should have committed to Z at the five. Throughout all the struggles, the getting pushed around, commit to it because I thought he had the most long-term potential, ideally, too, to possibly be back here another year. And then how he fits with the way you're wanting to transition your game and continue moving offensively, he fits it. And he can block some shots. So maybe could have developed a little bit more. But I personally would be so excited if he's in this program going through an entire offseason in the weight room and then getting the full effect of a Kentucky basketball season, being an instant contributor from day one. If he's on the roster, then I think that there is a scenario here where Jaden Quaintance actually comes off the bench to start the year for Kentucky. And I'm okay with that.
Me too.
And with the two-year window that we're talking about and the runway that we've talked about on here, that actually, to me, is a good thing because you're not forcing the issue right out of the gate. And I think Jaden is entering this process knowing that he's 2 years and not feeling the pressure of having to be an NBA one-and-done guy by May is a pretty relaxing thing for a 17-year-old kid coming into this program. It also helps Cal navigate, to me, playing who his best guys end up being. That's the scenario here. There's going to be 12 to 13 bodies on this roster. I need eight of them to be significantly better than 9, 10, 11, and 12. We can't be in another year where once you get past 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 kind of just push each other around and nobody really emerges. That's what has to happen. When you give him less and you give him an eight-man rotation that's just significantly better than their ninth man at the moment, that's when Kentucky has its best basketball teams. So I need whatever this thing looks like, I need eight of them to be better than what 9 and 10 are. But here's the other side of this. You got to stay healthy. And this is a program that's not really had success with that the last 5 or 6 years. There's always been an injury or two that's kind of derailed it, which when you go back and look at the first couple of years that he was here, pretty remarkable, as thin as they were in 2011 and in 2012, that nobody got hurt. And they went the distance playing 6 or 7 guys. So depth's a good thing, and sometimes depth's a bad thing. Depth is a bad thing, Jack, when it can't separate itself.
As we saw this year.
Yep. So that's what needs to happen, whatever this looks like. And that's why I trust veteran pieces over freshmen. Unless your freshmen are on the upper half of elite. Like Rob Dillingham is going to always emerge. Guys like Rob are going to emerge and be the best. It's the guys that are the in-between that kind of cuff you to what you're trying to do. And that's where I lean veteran pieces to your roster that know what they're doing, and you know what they are the moment before they step on the floor for you. A lot of these freshmen, we don't know yet.
Yeah, it's going to be wild. That's why I wouldn't put a ton of stock into every individual name that we see pop up with Kentucky in terms of guys that UK has reached out to, because it's in such a weird holding pattern right now where you know with confidence that you can go recruit a Cliff Amore. Like you're going to need that role. So you feel confident kind of pushing some chips in on that one. Probably going to need some type of shooting, scoring, defensive presence, ideally in the backcourt, maybe to complement DJ Wagner, whatever. Do you feel pretty good about having go get the best guard that you can go find in the portal, go find the best anchoring center, and kind of work with other pieces around you from there? But in terms of all of the other, the Stetson guy, College of Charleston guy, even AJ Storr, there's a report that Kentucky's interested in him. He's going to come with a high price tag. That's actually been publicly reported, which is very weird that we are in that time of where there's an actual public price tag on a kid, which feels icky in the college basketball realm, but that's kind of the day and age that we're in. But
if you could get three guys back, take Rob out of it, obviously. Who are your three? If you could get three guys back for how they would fit with everybody else and with the freshman class and what we've talked about portal, because right now it's hard, Jack, because we have no idea really who they are targeting in the portal. And there's still those stay or go decisions that have to kind of fall those dominoes before we can really settle in. But I think that if we've not talked about this, I think our names are probably going to be the same. So where would you go if you could have three?
I don't think it's close, and it's DJ, Reed, and Z. I think those are the three. But I think there is a growing understanding internally about Reed where it would be financially irresponsible for him to come back, and it kind of sucks that his dad is a financial advisor, and it would kind of be malpractice on his part to recommend him to do anything but go take the guaranteed money. Like, kind of his job. So we're in a weird spot of, it's a head versus heart type of deal. But when I talking to people that know how Reed's process has gone and where, how we got to this point and this journey, he came in expecting to be a 3-4 year guy. He came in with the mindset of, I have no pressure, kind of like the Jaden Quaintance thing. I have no pressure on me whatsoever to be successful from day one. I think I can make an impact early, but I'm not putting any pressure on me to go be a one and done, go be an NBA guy immediately. So he kind of came in with a certain mindset and approach. And then he kind of caught lightning in a bottle and became the National Freshman of the Year as the legacy guy, as the golden boy in Kentucky, all of the things kind of struck at once to where it's overwhelming him a little bit to just be like, I don't want to leave, but it would be irresponsible of me not to leave. So I think that the people around the program have kind of they were hopeful because they know that he's a different kid and the dynamics are different with him than anybody else that we've ever seen in college basketball, given his draft stock, where he came from, the legacy status, all of that stuff. There was always going to be a lingering hope of, well, maybe. What if he wakes up with an Oscar epiphany of, I have unfinished business to take care of in Lexington, let's run it back. That was always on the table, and it's still maybe. But there, I think, is a growing consensus internally. It's like, it would be dumb of us to assume that this kid is going to come back. Let's just let him make his decision, move forward as if he's not. And then if we have to have tough conversations down the road of, hey, sorry, we have Reed Shepherd, National Freshman of the Year, coming back. Tough luck. We got to do what we got to do. That's the right way to operate, if you ask me. Go recruit in Reed's spot as if you're going to need a Reed replacement. Hope that you get DJ back. There's some good vibes going with that. And with Z as your you know, kind of high potential guy next to Jaden Queens. That's a guy that you can dream big about with him. And so I long story short with the Reed thing, Reed is definitely my guy, but I'm going to kind of operate the way the UK staff is and assume that he's not going to be there and say from there, Adu is probably the next most likely, but if you're going to commit to Zeke, like we went in our spiel last week about Adu coming back and the value that he brings, but that was also with us assumption that Z had one foot out the door and was leaving.
Yep.
They're both kind of versatile two-way different guys at the five and small ball four with the other guys that you have coming in. That kind of makes it interesting. I almost say if you Jordan Burks is very likely to come back, he might just be the guy that you have as an insurance policy on the bench and then commit elsewhere with the portal. That might be my approach.
That actually is my approach with it now. And that's where I was coming from. Like if you're having a high price ticket to get a Adu back, then I think you really got to look at it and think, yes, you would love to have a Adu Thero back on this roster. And there are people that are going to be, you know, in this chat and stuff that want to do Thero back, but this is where you got to make business decisions. It's a business now. Like it truly is. And
is it fair to say though, you got to get one of the two back in Z or Adu?
You have to, yeah, because
I think that's kind of my approach, because it's not a done deal that Z's coming back. It's still complicated. He would like to go pro, but it would just be financially smart for him to invest in himself long-term as a potential lottery pick next year by coming back.
Well,
got to get one of the two.
You have to, because if you tell people that this team just went through the season that they went through, first of all, let's take it a different route. They lost to Oakland. That's never going to be acceptable, ever. At any point, at any year, 100 years from now, 200 years from now, that's never going to be acceptable in this program. If it is, something changed, and I'm not going to be alive to see it. But when you look at it, if you could have told people that they would get 4, 5, 6 guys back from this team, probably wouldn't have been – I mean, you would be upset. But you probably could have looked at it and said, going to have a pretty good team next year. And then we just kind of mix and match and get better defensively and try to figure it out.
It's like that 2013-14 team if they didn't go to the championship game.
Exactly. But if you only – so then what you're talking about is if you don't get Z and you don't get a Adu, then you're getting one, possibly. Let's just say it's DJ. And I'm not – Jordan comes back, but I'm talking guys that played minutes and contributed. That probably doesn't sit well with people, because you're just starting entirely all over again. And you've got 6 freshmen coming in the door that you probably look at and can say, I don't know if there's an All-American coming in the door or freshman player of the year. I don't. There's no assurance of that. So that creates another dynamic. That's where I'm thinking that the sweet number that I'm looking at with all this. And when you construct rosters, and I'm no longer constructing rosters in college basketball, I'm constructing rotations. Not 13-man rosters. 8 to 9-man rotation. That's how I'm building. If I'm a college basketball coach in this era, I am building my rotation year to year. And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking, okay, here's 3 guys that have experience in my program that have played minutes that are going to be rotation pieces, maybe – 2 of them start. If Adu comes back, then I could see Adu, Z, and DJ starting. So right there's 2 to 3 starters. Now my next focus is transfer portal. Go and get guys that are capable starters. Do I have freshmen coming in or just better? And then I'm looking at, here's my 8, 9-man rotation. And now 10, 11, 12, I can build my roster and construct it how I want. And if I go get developmental pieces that I know are going to stick with me, which is hard to do at Kentucky because the precedent has been set that if you walk in these doors, you walk out them as a pro. That's the tough part that's hard to navigate. But that's why my focus would be on building an 8 to 9-man rotation right now and kind of go into it with that mindset. I think that's what Cal's mindset needs to be right now is I need 8 to 9 guys that I'm going to play. Who are they? And I can't be looking at guys that could potentially do it. I need to know when September and October hits, that I've got two or three guys from the portal that have done it that I can rely on to eat up minutes and play valuable roles for me, in addition to two to three guys coming back, and now hopefully two of these freshmen pop. And if they do, I think you got a nucleus and a core that can be really good.
My official prediction, as we get into the meat and potatoes of stay and go decisions, I say Kentucky adds two stars in the portal, one star guard, one star center. I think DJ returns, Z returns, Jordan Burks returns, and that makes up your entire returning class. And then four of the six freshmen are some level of impact guy.
So five players with experience in college basketball, and then the freshman class.
And four of the six being contributors. So nine-man rotation, if you will.
Yes. Yeah.
Eight to nine, nine to start the year, maybe 10, as you know, we'd go through the non-conference and do all that. But once we kind of ramp things up, you have a clear eight or nine.
And I can live with that. If that's what this looks like, I can live with it, because it settles into, as I said, and now you're saying stars, like difference-making guys, not just reserve guys, right?
Cliff Amori and a guy that may not even be in the portal yet in the backcourt.
Yeah, and the guys that you know that have done it somewhere else that you know are just going to make instant impact. That's the difference.
Cliff equivalent in the backcourt, yeah.
Yeah. See, that now that's where I can get behind what you just said, because I know what I'd be getting in the portal. I necessarily don't want to take guys that would be best coming off, you know, from the portal that are going to be best being a sixth or seventh or eighth man. Like, I need guys that can wear it and hold it. And I'd want my freshmen to kind of be my reserve role pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give me that, if you tell me that I can get two stars from the portal with DJ and Z, Jordan Burke's a guy that with a frame that I think if you put in some development, and you don't know what he's going to look like, but I still see value in him being on this roster.
Me too.
There's five. And if I, like I said yesterday, if it's an 8 to 9 man rotation and 55-60% of its experienced pieces, hey, I got what I wanted. And then you let Billy and Carter kind of develop at their rate.
See if Cream rises to the top with one of those guys too. They're both kind of capped with what their ceiling is, but they're both kind of specialty guys where if Carter becomes Chris Livingston, best version of Chris Livingston, that guy's going to play. If Billy Richmond becomes DeAndre Liggins, a defensive specialist, kind of a specialist guy where you know, okay, well, we need, you know, when Cal goes to his bench and goes, you know exactly what you're getting when Billy Richmond comes in the game. There's value there. So I'm kind of banking on one of those two. I don't know who it's going to be yet. We'll see, you know, how they adjust on campus, but I'm hoping, maybe it's just kind of just hope more than expectation, that one of those two, the cream rises to the top with one of them.
And whoever that guy is in the backcourt has to be a shooter. It's got to be a guy that can make shots at an impressive clip to me, because Boogie can.
Mm-hmm.
And you give me another guy that can make them, and I think you're going to see an improved shot from DJ if he's back next year in college basketball. But overall, I can live with the guys that you just named. And then you go into 25 into the next season. God, what would that be? 25, 26? Would that be the season? Yeah, you go into that one. And you probably don't take six freshmen anymore. Unless.
You're going to take the damn good ones. You're going to take. You go get a reclassed Tyron Stokes. Go get some dudes. You know, like.
But that's the difference.
That's what this should be. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. Like, if you're going to go get generational dudes, then you take that.
Load up on those dudes. And like. There's still kind of an avenue, like, what if Darren Peterson comes knocking on your door?
That's true.
If he's ready for the college game right now and you take him rather than going in on
Now,
insert star portal guy. Do you just live with that and say, screw it, we're going seven freshmen? They're kicking the tires on Liam McNeely. I like him a lot. He's unbelievably skilled, kind of that point forward.
Do you like him more if he's eating up one of the already had spots, though, in the class?
Absolutely.
Yep, me too. Absolutely. And that's what I'm getting at. You can't be afraid now at this point that you have lost in the first round three consecutive years. Or not first round, first weekend. Three consecutive years and missed the tournament the year before. You cannot be afraid to recruit over people. When you've seen the end result and you've crossed the finish line and you're seeing dudes in front of you, you have every right to blow it up and look at it differently. That was the biggest thing in 2022 when they lost to St. Peter's. I thought Cal had an opportunity to kind of just say, nope, that's not how I wanted to go, and could have changed something at some spots. Not the overall thing. Like, I thought they had really quality pieces that were good. That team, Jack, if you run it back and you could have given me something different when it comes to spacing, that team had the pieces to go on a run and go to a Final Four. They drilled Kansas a month and a half before the tournament started and then beat North Carolina off the floor. Like, that was a team that, at its best, was good enough to win a national championship. Now, when you look at this year, what gets me back to that point? And if a recruit or if a freshman or someone that you see is better than what you've got and you can get them, you just go do it. And then if the other people aren't on board with it, let them find another place. To be successful, you have to have uncomfortable conversations and you have to make decisions. And this is an ever-changing climate that you're navigating now in college basketball. I get it. You don't want to say and take somebody and then change your mind. It happens all the time when coaches change jobs. When new coaches comes in, boom. Sorry, I'm not offering you a scholarship. That was from a previous staff. Well, when I just got beat by Oakland in the NCAA tournament and I possibly was on the fence about wondering if I had a job or not for 4 days, it's not nothing personal. I got to do what's best for me, and I got to do what's best for this program. So if you find better fits along the way, I'm sorry. And maybe this will be the reason why I never get a college coaching job. I don't know. But here I am.
Don't say that. We're going to speak that into existence. We've been rambling for a minute. This was a fun show. I enjoyed these are always hard times because it's never fun with the stay go stuff, with so many rumors and moving parts, especially with this program, especially with this roster, especially this offseason, considering what's at stake. It sucks. But we're going to have a lot to talk about. We're going to have a lot to get to and get excited about.
That graphic right there has been written on this show the last 3 years. Is this the most important offseason of the Calipari era? Jack, we have done this same topic every year since me and you've been on the show. But it's true. Because you sense the frustration growing every single year. But it has calmed down. Because I think it has. And here's where I think you mentioned the word apathy earlier. I do think that that is coming into play a little bit here. To where maybe you're not as excited because it's still so far away. And none of us want to go through the whole May, June, July, how they're going to be good. But once we get to November and Big Blue Madness kicks off in October, we're going to be sitting here on this podcast talking about how Kentucky's got the pieces to make a run. And we're going to talk about
we're real fans. That is how we operate.
It is 100%.
Just let us feel how we operate. Just let us feel what we got to feel.
My feelings are valid. That's what I'm going to say. Yeah. Like, everybody's
thank you, Boogie
feelings
Flan.
Are valid.
All I wanted to hear was Boogie Flan say, hey, buddy, feel emotional. It's okay. That's all I needed. That's all I needed to just get me through and have my little – let me have my little moment. We'll recover at some point. Let's wrap up there.
Yeah.
We'll do more of these to, you know, as more news comes out, we're going to be doing the show a lot more often than, a set – post, you know, we'll try to stick to a normal weekly schedule, but as news pops, we'll obviously have to, you know, talk about that and address them in a timely manner. So there'll be a lot more where this comes from. Until then, KSR is thrilled to partner with our good friends at Fayette Heating and Air and H2O Maestro. Their team of experts are ready to handle all of your heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical needs. To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit FayetteHeating.com, your number one complete home solutions company in Kentucky. And then the Source Today podcast is also brought to you by Andy Ludeke and MyPerfectFranchise.net. Andy is a franchise consultant as well as franchise owner and helps people find franchises to fit their skill sets, financial requirements, time to commit, and more. His services are 100% free, and he is here to help if you have any questions about business ownership. You can learn more and contact Andy anytime at www.MyPerfectFranchise.net. Sean, fun show. There's going to be a lot more where this comes from. Where can fans find your work?
Well, that's the question now. Where are you
going to be working? Like what is the latest there?
Well, I mean, I changed my social media handle and stuff for on Twitter. There is no more at GBB Country because I've kind of moved into the whole coaching thing here with that. But Jack, we're still trying to figure out which one fits me best, but I've changed it so many times a day that I've kind of locked it. But right now I think it's, @_CoachSSmith is how you can follow me on social media for the time being, but I'm going to come up with something a little bit easier.
Cool. Yeah. We'll be following along with your coaching carousel, as things move forward. We're excited for that. We're proud of you and, you'll find the right fit and we'll see. We'll be following along with that very closely. You can find me on Twitter @JackPilgrimKSR. Go subscribe to KSR Plus. All of the roster, stay and go, intel, all that stuff. It's already been on the board. Way more in depth. Way more than what we were able to talk about here on the air. So if you have not subscribed to that yet, what the hell are you waiting for? Make sure you subscribe to this show. There's a lot of people just browsing and finding it with the features and all that stuff of YouTube. You can get the notification set up right whenever we go live every single time instead of just, you know, searching on your own. So make sure you do that. Subscribe here. Appreciate you guys joining us tonight. A blast. As always, thank you very much. We will see you next time.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.